Anladım. Anladım.
If you've ever gone through some things in life that are unfair, it will inevitably cause you to cry out, God, why me? Well, if there's a guy who deserves to ask that question, it's my guest today, Matthew Lemke. I've interviewed people in the past that have gone through some pretty severe life-threatening illnesses, like Bill Gassiamas, who went through three strokes. But what Matthew describes today, holy cow, this guy has gone through it. And his attitude and the way that he approaches challenges today, I think it's something that all of us can learn from. So sit back and you're going to be enthralled listening to my guest on this episode of Unbeatable, Matthew Lemke. Hey guys, before we get into the interview, let me remind you, we announced last week there is huge changes on the horizon. If you are part of the regular Unbeatable audience, I've been teasing you for quite some time that there are some big changes coming. Well, the wait is over, and here is a special message about the future of the Unbeatable podcast and what's coming after it. Check this out.
Hey everyone, today I've got some big news to share. After 3 years of a weekly podcast interviewing some amazing guests, I'm going to make a huge transition. Man, your support to me over the last 3 years has meant the world. But as we move forward, I'm going to replace the Unbeatable podcast, both audio and video, with a television show. You don't have to live in the local area to watch this television show, because the television show is going to broadcast on the internet. It'll be available on Apple TV, on Roku, on Amazon. In fact, I'm launching an entire television channel called Jeff Strucker Ministries. Now, this new venture, it aims to empower lives. We're going to try to inspire people's faith, and I want to continue to try to make an impact. But this new venture is designed to make an eternal impact. And if you'll stay with me, and the entire Unbeatable Army will come with me, together we'll continue to inspire and uplift people. We'll create change that will last in people's lives over a lifetime. And we'll try to do something that will shake the foundations of heaven, that will matter into eternity. I just want to tell you thanks. Thanks for being so loyal to the podcast, and thanks for your continued support. Now, stay tuned for more updates about this television show, about the television channel that I'm creating to replace the Unbeatable podcast called Jeff Strucker Ministries. Can't wait for you to see it as we get ready to launch it in just a few weeks. See you guys.
And now, my interview with Matthew Lemke.
These stories of triumph over adversity will help you handle your toughest days in life and become unbeatable.
Hey, Matthew, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being a guest with me today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You and I have had to do some hard work just to make our schedules line up so that we can have this conversation today, right?
Yeah. We tried since December.
I have done episodes in the past of people that have dealt with some medical conditions, but man, I don't know that I've talked to anybody that's had to overcome some of the medical challenges that you've had to overcome. And that's where really I want us to spend a lot of our time in this discussion today. So why don't you get us started by, you know, just explaining, you know, how these medical conditions started for you?
Sure. Yeah. So I have what's called Arnold-Chiari malformation. Basically what that is the cerebral tonsils on the bottom of your brain, they're growing into my spinal cord. It's a birth defect that I've had all my life, but the symptoms started in middle school. I say this in my book a lot, is that I basically had a gimpy leg. I could not put my heel all the way down. And at that time, being in middle school, I wasn't really concerned about my health.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was going to say, I remember the horrible names that middle schoolers called each other. I can imagine what you were hearing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I had a lot of different names, but I was more focused on other things, like getting a date to the homecoming, you know, things like that. I didn't care about this weird health anomaly that I had going on. So I ignored it. I didn't really pay much attention to it. And then when I got into high school, the whole trying to get a date thing was even more so, and I didn't care about it. But this time I started to get a shortness of breath, and that was kind of the drawing line where I was like, okay, I need to look at something. I need to see what's going on here. And I went to a local doctor, and they said that I was young. They blew me off, kind of wrote me off as a young person, and said, just go exercise. That was literally about what I got told. So I trusted the doctors, and I said, okay, whatever, let's go. So I continued on, it didn't really bother me. It didn't really stop me from doing what I needed to do in my life. You know, I still was working fine. I just had this leg problem, and I had a shortness of breath. And as I got older, and when I got out of high school, I had a big acting dream. I wanted to be an actor. And so I went to auditions. I moved to Austin, Texas. I went to go chase that dream. And
You went to help keep Austin weird, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So I moved there, and I quickly learned that acting is pretty hard. And it's kind of sort of like a lottery dream. It's really hard to get into. It's tough.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also went on a whim. I didn't have a job lined up. I didn't have a car. I didn't really have any money. I just went.
You just thought, I'm going to make it big the first night that I'm there, and then the money and the will start rolling in, and then I'll buy the car.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Everything else.
And my parents were trying. They kind of gave me that piece of advice. They were like, "Are you sure you need you? Do you really?
Yeah. Have you done your research? Yeah. Are you sure that this is going to work out the way that you're imagining?"
Yeah. It didn't. So I came home pretty quick. I think it was about 6 months after that. I came back and I was like, all right, I'm a 21, 22 year old. I need to get a good job. And so I found this job in the oil field. That's when I really my health took off in a big way. I am a small guy. I'm like 5'6", 5'7", 120 pounds. Normally, when you think of an oil field guy, you think of kind of a big, gruff dude.
Yeah.
But so I went in, and I was on the production side, but I still was swinging a lot of sledgehammers. I was carrying big iron on my shoulders. I was actually running circles around these big, gruff guys because I had this mentality when I grew up.
Come on, Matthew. All right. Yeah.
I wanted to basically get to my limit and push past it. That was always what I kept saying to myself. Like, I wanted to just keep going. And so I was really pushing hard, right? And that's when my health really declined a lot, though. My leg basically became my balance leg. I couldn't even put any more weight on my right leg.
Really?
Yeah. And I had constant pain. It was just every single day when I went to bed, I had pain. And my shortness of breath got to the point where it was almost every day, all day long. I just couldn't take a deep breath. I just kept doing all these short breaths. Yeah, so that was a really challenging time for me right there, too, was this. I just felt like I was just coming down. And so fast forwarding a little bit of that, I finally went to a specialist later on, and the specialist was a neurosurgeon. The neurosurgeon did almost the same exact thing. He almost blew me off as a young person.
And said, go outside and exercise.
Yeah. Right?
Tell the guy who can't really walk very well and has problems breathing, run outside, go outside and do exercise. Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah. But I tell people that I kind of believe God was working in this moment here. And because he said, just to be on the safe side, let's go ahead and scan your back. Let's just do that. He said, I don't think we'll find anything, but hey, why not? Let's just go ahead and do an MRI of your back. Prior to this, all I ever got was x-rays. I never could get an MRI.
Yeah, yeah.
It was impossible.
Because MRIs cost a lot more money. That's why.
Exactly. And so when they did x-rays, they just did my hips and my legs, and they were like, oh, there's nothing going on here. So I got this MRI. They scanned my back is what they did. They didn't go to my brain. In my back, they found a cyst growing inside of my spinal cord, and it was attached to my brainstem, and it stopped halfway down my back.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Hold on. I need to get the anatomy right. You have a cyst that starts at the base of your brainstem. It's in your, you're saying that it's growing in the middle of your spinal cord?
Yep.
And it's going all the way down to the middle of your back?
Yep, pretty much in the middle of my back.
Holy smokes, yep. Man.
Yeah, I called it Fred. That was the nickname I gave my spinal cyst. It's called, and I actually have a hard time pronouncing my own diagnosis here, serogemilia. Serogemilia. Syrinx cyst, for short. But that was what was growing inside of my spinal cord. Is this
related to or because of the condition that you had starting in middle school?
Yep. Yeah. So it was caused by Chiari. So when that brainstem is coming down into the spinal cord, it's blocking the fluid naturally flowing through the spinal cord, and it creates all these pockets of spinal fluid inside of the spinal cord, and then it just gets all blocked up, and destroys the inside of your spinal cord. I don't understand it. But the doctor very later on in my story, he says, I don't even know how you walked into my office in the first place. And I told him, God literally had my back. Like,
wow. Okay. I love that one. That's a good one, Matthew. Yeah. You need to use that one more often. Yeah. God had my back. He had my six.
Yep.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah.
All right. So I got to know a little bit more about the potential for this cyst. Like, if it's in the middle of your spinal cord, this is impacting essential body functions. This is not just your ability to walk or your muscle control, but this is honestly, it's life or death, right? Because even the autonomic nervous system, and I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking about right now, but even the all of the listeners know Jeff doesn't have the first idea what he's talking about. But even those autonomic nervous system part of your body are controlled by the spinal cord, right? So this is very, very life threatening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the doctor later on, he said he thinks that the shortness of breath was just, it was hitting those nerves that were going to my lungs.
And the nerves were telling the lungs don't expand or, wow.
Yeah. So, in this condition, it does not have a cure. There's no cure for it. There's not a magic fix for it. There's only really, I call them band-aids, and it's physical therapy or brain surgery. And those are pretty much most.
Those are your two choices. You can either have physical therapy or we can do brain surgery.
Yeah. So in my case,
I think I know which choice I'm going to take.
Yeah. Well, in my case, brain surgery was strongly encouraged, because of the size of my spinal cyst.
Yeah.
And
because of how deadly, right? How life threatening it is.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was diagnosed in August and I had the surgery in January. It was pretty quick.
Wow.
Normally, at least from my experience or my knowledge, it doesn't happen that quick. Normally they have a little bit longer stretch, you know, after your diagnosis. But it was January 5th, 2016. That's when I had my brain surgery. What they do is to do the fix or the band-aid is they go in the back of your head. I'm not gonna get too gruesome here, but
it's all right. We can get gruesome. It's fine.
So they cut open that back. They kind of move all of those muscles around, and then they go through the membrane, and then they cut the bottom. So there's a foramen magnum on the bottom, and they cut the foramen magnum larger. And basically they put a leather patch up in there. And they push the brain back up into your brain, your skull. So I have a leather patch holding my brain.
I see why you call it a Band-Aid now. Exactly. In your case, the Band-Aid is leather.
Yeah.
But they're stuffing your brain back into the cranial cavity or into the cavity in your cranium
yes.
right now. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that you can say all of this language and just laugh about it and smile about it is even more impressive, Matthew.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, it's just, that's how kind of how I've always been. I've always tried to be pretty positive about it, everything in my life, you know, like I just, it comes a little bit more naturally to me. But I do have, of course, I'm human. I have my moments, you know. I have a lot of after effects of the brain surgery, and the things that come from that. And so what I'm talking about here is so, and this is the big part of my story. This is the most exciting part that I love to share with people is when I had my brain surgery, I was told, this is what I was told. I was, so you're probably going to stay overnight in the hospital. And you might have light physical therapy. You might have a little bit of swelling in your brain. So you might have to have a little bit of physical therapy. That was not the case at all. It was a total surprise. What they did when they got in there, they actually found what's called an arachnoid cyst. It's a cyst I kind of forget to bring up a lot, but it was a kind of an afterthought or after find. But it needed to be removed. Too. It had to be removed, and it was so this is the illustration I give. There's those two tonsils. Remember I was saying they go down to the spinal
cord. Yeah. You call them tonsils, but I always thought tonsils were in the back of your throat. You're saying that there's tonsils on the back of your brain too?
Yeah, the brain stem. It has these two like tonsils that are like next to each other. That's what I was told they were called.
Well, whatever. I'm just saying, like, I got tonsils in my brain and in my throat.
Yep. Okay. What do you do? So the tonsils, they were, you know, they're the back of that and the brain stem, and they're going down. Now, this arachnoid cyst was actually pushing one of these tonsils all the way to the other side. And so it was basically non-existent. So those tonsils from what I always understood is they control your motor movements. Basically they shoot all the signals down and that's how you know how to move and things like that. And so what he had to do was to remove that cyst off of my tonsils. He had to cut a little bit of my brain to push it back, basically to bring it back to where it needed to go. I don't know how, but that's why he had to do that. But, when he did this, I woke up paralyzed from the neck down.
My goodness, man.
Yeah. I had no, when I initially woke up, I couldn't move. I couldn't feel anything at all. That was probably about a day. I couldn't feel anything or move. Maybe a little less, maybe about 20 hours or so. I'm just kind of ballparking numbers here. But once my body came back online, and this is the illustration I give in my book also is when you look at a baby, which is kind of a cool thing for me right now because I have a baby, is when you look at a baby, and they're very spastic, you know, they kind of don't know how to control their hands and they move their hands really slow like that. That's how I was. When my body came online, I just couldn't control my body. I had to basically reteach myself how to operate again. And I was labeled a quadriplegic. So it was
I am trying to imagine, and I'm struggling with this, what it would have felt like to wake up but not be able to move and to feel like, well, I just came out of surgery, so obviously this is permanent.
Yeah.
And how do you wrestle through, I just ruined my future by having this surgery, right? Because it was bad. It was even dangerous or life-threatening. But if I hadn't done, but before the surgery, at least I could move my arms and legs. And now I can't move anything below my neck. I would love to know what was going through your mind during those 20 hours or so while you're in the hospital, unable to move after this surgery.
It was a lot of confusion. It was more so confusion about why I was facing this kind of situation, you know, because I had that first thought of like, I'm a good person. You know, I didn't steal. I didn't, you know, rob. I didn't kill anything. I didn't do anything bad. Why am I going through this experience? When I lived an okay life, basically, That was what was really going through my head a lot for that first period of time. And as I got further into that, and this kind of brings up a little bit of my faith in this moment here. But I prior to that, I had sort of a faith in God before that, and but it wasn't really a pursuit to God. And I sort of knew who he was, but I didn't really care, I guess. I didn't really look to him, and so I tell people, for me, this was almost like a test for me, of my faith for God. And I, as I was progressing in this recovery after surgery, as I became very spastic, I really questioned God a lot in a big way, because I thought he would get me out of it, I guess. Like, hey, like, why am I doing this? Like, I've been a good person for you. And this kind of is the point of where I got into the occupational therapy, which I moved. Originally I was in Victoria, Texas, is where I lived at. And so I went to occupational therapy. Post-acute medical is what the place was called. And I was there for 27 days, and I was or an inpatient. I'm sorry, it was inpatient rehab. So I lived at the hospital 24/7, and they watched me all the time. And I had physical therapy in the morning and occupational therapy in the afternoon. And I was really questioning my faith a lot, and I'm kind of going, I'm sort of trailing off here a little bit, and I apologize. But when I was going through this, I found myself thinking of this like a when I think of a like a horse, that has the blinders, they're keeping from being distracted over here, right? I had that same thing, but in my way of looking at it, as I wasn't really, I was being distracted from looking at God. I wasn't seeing the big picture of what was going on. And when I was in that inpatient rehab, I had actually lost a lot of weight. I went from 120 pounds to 100 pounds. So I
Wow,
was,
that's 20% of your body weight
yeah,
almost.
I was skin and bones, right? And I at that time I was really going downhill with my positive attitude. I remember my mom kind of feeling very worried for me, because she knew that my whole life I've been a very upbeat personality person, and she always asked people to pray, because I wasn't being myself. I was kind of getting angry too. I wanted to be better already, I tried several times in that 27-day period to walk. And I failed every time. And I tell people it's because I wasn't really leaning on God in this time. I was being distracted from seeing what was God was doing, and he was right in front of me the whole entire time. But I didn't see him. Now, the 23rd day, I was 100 pounds, skin and bones. I was just lost. And I was doing occupational therapy on this day, and I was sitting there. And at that time, I was able to sit up all by myself, but I would either lose my balance or get really tired. And I could stand up, but I had to hold on to somebody in situation. And I was sitting there, and I got done with occupational therapy, and I was tired. I was exhausted. I had totally let go of this idea that I could do it on my own. Of the being able to walk again and being able to use my hands again. And then that's when the blinders just completely dropped. And I audibly heard God tell me it's time to start walking again, which blew my mind later on. But at that moment, I just instantly reacted to it. And I looked at my therapist and I said, "I don't know how to explain this to you, but it's time for me to start walking again." And she looked at me and she said, "All right, well, let's go." So
Nice. That's a good physical therapist right there. Yes.
Yeah. And I stood up that day and I grabbed on her forearms and I walked all the way to my room that day. It was not a short walk.
Wow. Yeah. Just sitting up made you exhausted before this day?
Yes. Yeah. It was quite an experience to walk all the way to my room. Now, I'll be really honest with you. People were crying. Everybody was emotional. Everybody was moved. It was a really great moment, but I went straight to sleep. I was so tired.
You just finished a marathon getting back to your hotel room, right? I mean, your hospital room. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So after that, I tell people that I began walking again, but I'm literally running towards God now. I love everything about my situation. I have been so excited to share my story with people. I do have a lot of problems. I use quotations because they're kind of a problem, but they don't really stop me. But I still have partially paralyzed hands from my surgery. My handwriting is not as pretty as it used to be anymore. But it is what it is.
I would ask you for a sample, but for the people that are driving and listening right now, it's not going to make a difference.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes. But yeah, that's a lot of the story right there.
I wish I could talk for just a minute to the neurosurgeon who did the operation, because I'm thinking it takes nerves of steel to cut away, if I heard you correctly, cut away at part of your brain just to be able to deal with this cyst that's on the brainstem right there. Like, I can't imagine the kind of skill, but also the kind of courage it takes to make that cut. And then you wake back up after they put the leather Band-Aid inside of you. And then basically, if I heard you correctly, that surgeon just did a hard reset on your whole body. Kind of like when somebody resets their phone, it takes, you know, a long time to load everything back up and to get it all running again. I didn't know that there was a hard reset on the human brain, but it sounds like they hit the hard reset button on your brain, and it takes 27 days for at least 27 days and a miracle of God in order for you to be able to recover after a hard reset on the human brain is what I heard you say it.
Yes. Yeah. The doctor actually told my mother one day he was wired wrong his whole life. I rewired him.
So they really did do a hard reset on your brain is what what you're saying.
Yep.
How old were you when you did the surgery?
I was 23 and I'm 32. Actually today, I forgot to tell you that.
Today's your birthday?
Yes.
What? Come on, man. You did us a solid by being on this show on your birthday. Happy birthday, man. Thank you for taking some time out on your birthday.
Yeah. 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 Definitely.
You're married today, but were you single? Did you have family and friends around you when you're in the hospital and trying to recover from this surgery?
I was dating somebody at the time, and she was with me a lot at that period. My wife now came in after, and she kind of had to take on a lot from this experience, and she still tries to kind of get used to it a little bit. We've been married for 3 years, and she still kind of has to get used to the idea that I mean, it doesn't really slow me down, but, you know, I do have days where I'm in a lot of pain, you know, because of like the weather as an example. But she came in after, and it was mostly my mom and my sister that was with me a lot.
Okay. So you described there's no cure for this. So it sounds like you're going to be dealing with lingering conditions and perhaps even with more surgeries again in the future. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Right now, if I heard you correctly, you have a problem with your hands and you said you're not able to use them completely. What do you mean exactly?
Basically they feel like they're asleep 24/7. Uh-huh. They have that numb feeling.
Oh, do they have that little numb thing where it's tingling all over the place
all day?
Oh, I hate that, man. And you have that 24/7?
Yep. I've gotten used to it now. And When I'm writing, I have a hard time holding a pen now, but I can write fine. It's just it's harder, and my hands cramp up a lot quicker. And I also have a little bit of a balance issue. At my job, I do run into door frames a lot because I kind of lose my balance.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing at you, but I'm just thinking your boss is saying, "Do you know what's going to happen to our workman's comp insurance?"
Yeah. No, I laughed at everything. In fact, there was a moment which is totally, I tell people it's a bad joke. It's terrible, but it was on myself. So it just made it really fun. But when I was laid up in the hospital, and I remember my hands were spastic, I landed like this at one point, with my arms kind of up in the front, and the nurse comes.
For those of you who are not watching him on YouTube right now, he's got his fingers curled up, kind of like a kitten that's asleep in the, in the mother's lap.
Yeah. And so the doctor, or no, I'm sorry, the nurse comes in, and I said, "Look, I'm a T-Rex." She was like, "No, I can't laugh at this. That's a terrible joke." I was like, "It's okay. I love to make people laugh. Like, it makes me feel good when people are laughing, you know?"
You got a whole stand-up comedy routine that you can do out of this thing right here, Matthew. Man, I love the T-Rex imagery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you went down to 100 pounds, I mean, somebody who's 5'6", 5'8", is that what you said? This alone, just your weight becomes life-threatening, as not to mention, how do you put weight on when you can't exercise, when you're not able to, you don't have fine motor skills and all of that stuff. So how long did it take for you to kind of get back to your healthy weight?
That's a good question.
After this.
So basically what was going on is what you said, exercise. I couldn't really exercise all my muscles. I was in the bed. If you're in the bed for 27 days, you're going to start losing some weight.
Everything atrophies. Everything starts to shrink.
Exactly. The big thing that was really holding my weight back, though, is I was being overloaded with potassium. So they were still giving me B potassium, and I could not keep food down. And I couldn't keep pain medication down either. And so that was another factor. When we cut out the medication, I just cut it all out. I just said, no more. Like, we're going to stop.
Cold turkey on the potassium?
Yeah. And after that, I was able to start eating again. And I'll be honest, I can't remember the exact timeline, but I don't think it took me too long. Maybe a couple months, maybe a month. I'm not sure. But I was able to eat again, so I was getting the nutrients that I needed to gain that weight back. But I was still pretty light whenever I walked out of therapy, which is another thing. I walked out totally unassisted after 27 days. Nobody touched me the whole time.
Wow.
It was such a cool experience.
They didn't even wheel you out in a wheelchair to the curb?
I said, no, I don't want it. I was a little hard-headed when it came to the wheelchair for my own personal self. I didn't want it.
I can imagine that you've set a personal goal of, I'm going to walk out of this hospital and not be wheeled out of it.
Yeah, exactly. In fact,
sorry to interrupt you. You live in Texas still?
Yes.
Okay, so every Southern lady that I've ever met wants to stuff food down your mouth if you don't look like you have enough weight on you. And I'm just imagining you getting out of the hospital, some scrawny little dude, and every Southern woman in town is looking at you like, "Oh, honey, come over to the house. I'm going to fatten you up.
Yep,
we're going to put some weight on you."
When I got married, I was 130 pounds. My wife was like, "I need to put weight on you."
Yeah, I was going to say, your mom, your sister, everybody around you must have been trying to put weight on this guy.
For sure.
Okay, so you kind of glossed this over, and maybe you did this on purpose, but it wasn't lost on me. You dealt with a lot of pain before the surgery. The cyst caused pain. They've done the surgery, but the pain's not gone. Can you describe what the pain was like before the surgery? But also, I just got to ask you, man, what is the kind of pain that you're dealing with today? Where is the pain? What's it like?
Yeah, that's a good question. Before, I couldn't sleep. It hurt so bad. Even when I got off of my leg, I
Where did it hurt? Like, what was the pain?
The calf, my calf area, and my hip. And it was, if you did it like a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 10. It was miserable pain. And that shortness of breath was its own pain.
Is it because, I don't understand. So is it because there's something pressing on that nerve and it's nerve related pain that you just feel in the calf and in the hip?
Yeah. So it is more of a nerve pain. That's a good point. Uh-huh. The therapist told me later on that the nerve was so tight behind my calf. And it still is. It's just naturally just super tight. And it caused the pain and the issues with my leg and my hip.
Okay. I say that because there are plenty of people listening that already know this, but for those that don't know it, I have heard the people describe nerve pain and say that it's worse than a gunshot wound just because the intensity of nerve pain and because it doesn't let up, right? Yeah. Like there's no escaping it.
So that actually brings up a point I did not mention after my surgery, but the nerve pain so much more was a dull pain, I guess. It wasn't really a sharp pain like that description is. And it just more was like an achy, deep muscle pain too, because I couldn't, I wasn't using my leg anymore. It was just atrophying. Now the pain that you described was the worst pain ever. After my surgery, when I was coming online, all of my nerves were firing all at once. And it basically felt like I was on fire. And then it was either on fire or I was getting pinched by crabs everywhere. It was
there. That's a great description. So it feels like there is a fire inside my body right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And what made it worse is I couldn't even move to relieve that pain. When I was in the hospital bed, I had all of this pain and some of it would be itchy as well. I couldn't even itch my own self.
Yeah. So for the listener out there, can you imagine it feels like there's something on fire inside of you and you've got to move in order to make the fire go away, except you can't move. Yep. It feels like there's an intense itch, except for you can't scratch. So
yeah,
this would be a form of mental torture. And I mean, like, cognitive torture right now.
I had to have
that kind of pain, but not to be able to respond to it at all.
Yes, yes. I had people move my arms. That for some reason helped me so much when they would move my arms around. I don't know why, maybe blood flow, I have no idea, but it helped me a lot. And I'd have a nurse and my mom on one side moving my arms around. And that would help a lot. But I had to have them do that for me, of course.
Well, people that are paralyzed, often they don't have any feeling, which means they don't have any pain in the paralyzed areas.
Yeah.
The fact that you have this you're paralyzed, but have the intense pain and can't do anything about it is basically the worst of two scenarios, you know, like the worst possible case of two scenarios right now.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Yeah.
You said that you're still dealing with some of the pain as a result of this condition that can't be fixed and there's no cure for it, but there is some treatments, regular treatments. So what's the pain like today? Where is it?
It's not as bad. It's actually a lot better than it used to be. My shortness of breath is not around as much anymore, which, as I mentioned in the beginning, that was the worst part for me, was not being able to breathe. It's very rare when that happens. The leg pain, it doesn't hurt as much anymore. As you can probably imagine, the surgery site, it's pretty sore sometimes. I sit at a desk, and so sometimes it definitely bothers me a lot. They did shave my C1 and my C2 down, the two top parts, so I don't have, you know, exactly the greatest support on my neck, but it's a lot better than it was. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, and there's a leather strap inside of you holding stuff together.
Yeah.
Did they tell you, like, realistically, what does the future look like for you as it relates to this condition?
That's a great, great question. I get that a lot, actually. The doctors, after my surgery, he was very upfront and forward with me. He said, this surgery is not going to be a fix. It's not going to be a, it's not going to be a magical fix. And he was like, I'm sorry, but that's not how it's going to be. You may possibly have more brain surgeries in the future. I thankfully haven't. I mean, this is like super rare that I haven't had one. And then the after effect of the surgery, I was never told that I would never walk again. I was told that it was questionable and the timing. Yeah. It was, you might not, we don't know how long it will be, but you have a long recovery. That's pretty much what I got told. It was definitely an experience of that, as far as the unknown of what was going to happen.
And for the rest of your life, you might need more surgeries. The surgery might be your, you'll never walk again after that. Is that basically what the future looks like?
So I never was straight up told that, but I understand Chiari. I understand my condition, and that is always going to be in my brain. that is a possibility that could possibly happen. I don't know if that'll happen. It may or may not, but if it does, it does. I've gotten to a point in my life that whatever happens, happens, and it's in God's hands. When I went into my surgery, my mother asked me if I was nervous, and I said, I'm not anymore, because whatever happens, happens because God's got it. And then I did this, and this happened. And it's honestly made me happier. I'll be honest. I'm so much more happier now. Before, I thought I was going in the right track. I thought I was heading towards this point of my life that was going to be amazing. I was like headed toward the American dream, basically. And I was not happy. I didn't know what was going on with my life. I didn't have God in my life like I do today. Yeah. And it's amazing. It's perfect.
I want to come back to something you just said, but we'll come back there in just a second. There's some pretty special people in your life, and I really got to know about your wife and your children. You got married a couple of years ago, but your wife wasn't around when you were going through all of these medical procedures and recovering from them. So when you started to explain, you know, what you've been through before you guys got serious, before you guys got married, how did she take it when you started to explain your history?
I would say it was very much a trusting in God kind of situation, because she had a lot more of a stronger faith than I did, even when we first met, because I was still growing a lot. In fact, we met at a church, is what where we met at. It was
all right. Best way to do it right there. Yep.
I'll give you the short version of how we met. It is amazing. It is totally God. So I was single, and I had got a team together on Valentine's Day. We put sticky notes around our town of all these encouraging words. We put about 500 to 600 sticky notes around the town. My now wife found one of those sticky notes. And then she found me on Instagram, started following me. Then we met at a church. Like 2 months later.
Storybook wedding. This sounds like a Disney, the plot line for a new Disney movie right here.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they were doing the surgery, Obviously we already know the answer to this one right now, but was there any concern that you might not be able to have children?
No, that was never brought up. No, that was, okay. It wasn't ever brought up. So
okay. Well, for the listener out there, you're a dad, you have a son, but hey, congrats. You guys just had your second child. You've got a brand new baby girl. How old is she?
She is 9 days old, or 10 days old. She was born on the 21st, so it's 9 days.
Not only are you giving up time on your birthday to do this interview with me, Matthew, but I have had a couple of children myself, and I remember what it's like when they're 9 days old. Yeah. The fact that you're still awake into this, in 40 minutes into this interview, because basically having a newborn at the house means that you're in a persistent zombie state for like 6 weeks to 6 months.
You know it.
Because nobody gets any sleep for the next several months with a brand new baby at home. So congrats on your brand new baby girl.
Thank you.
But the fact that you're willing to do this interview 9 days after she was born, it is even more impressive. Frankly, I'm really, really impressed with your wife. For the courage of her faith to, you know, get into this relationship with you and, you know, go through this wild ride with you. Because honestly, and I'm being serious now, there are no guarantees. There's no guarantees that her husband's going to be around next month. There's no guarantees that her husband's going to be able to walk next month. There are no guarantees in life. And I'm assuming that your wife understood that before you guys said, "I do." And the fact that she was willing to go through with this relationship says to me, she must be a pretty special woman. You just made the statement a few minutes ago. I was thinking back. We did an interview with a guy who had multiple heart attacks before he turned 30 years old, realized that he had a very severe life-threatening condition. And in the course of that interview, he made this statement, and it sounded very similar to what you just said a moment ago. He said, "This medical tragedy became one of the greatest things that ever happened to me." And in his words, he was living his life, basically pursuing all of the wrong things, giving all of his time and energy to stuff that didn't really matter. And when he started to experience heart attacks and life-threatening conditions, one after another, before hitting 30 years old, it became really obvious, I might not be around tomorrow, let alone all of these dreams, professional goals that I was pursuing. And that's the moment, and in his language, that it became the best thing that ever happened to him, because it forced him to look at the way that he was living his life, and it was a wake-up call for him. And he realized, all of the stuff that I'm pursuing, even if I were to get it tomorrow, it doesn't matter if I die of a heart attack. And there's still, to this day, no guarantee that he's going to make it to see 35 or 40, but it doesn't matter if I die of a heart attack 2 days later. And it forced him to start to say, well, what really does matter? And he said that fundamentally changed his relationship with his wife, with his family, all of the people that are important to him. It radically changed his relationship. And in his words, I'll never forget it, the medical tragedies that he went through, he said, I wouldn't trade them for the world, because they changed him into the man that he is now.
I'll add on to that.
Well, you use this language, and I want to make sure that everybody heard that language from you.
Yes.
You use the language, I am far happier now after all of this intense medical challenges that you've been through. I am far happier now. I'm going to add this into the equation than you were, let's say, in high school or when you were working on the oil rigs.
Yes.
I need you to explain that some more to the audience.
Yes. I was going to add on to that is because the biggest thing that I got from this surgery is the biggest is my relationship with God. But the thing that I got was appreciating the smallest of things in our life. I literally lost the ability to brush my own teeth. The smallest thing that we don't even think about.
People don't get up tomorrow morning all fired up because, yeah, I'm going to be able to brush my teeth today.
The thing that I've got so much from it is just appreciating the smallest things that we have in our life. It's just the biggest, they're the biggest things slow down. I was going a million miles per hour before my surgery. I was, like he said, I was chasing all the wrong things. I was chasing money. I was chasing trying to make the American dream. But what I needed to be chasing was God and my relationship with him, because that was what I needed to do for number one. And it radically changed me in a big way. The mentality of the smallest things, that was what I really got from that.
There's a couple of things from your story that everybody, even if somebody will never experience anything close to what you've gone through medically, there's a few things that everybody can learn through and learn from. And one of those things is we all take the small things for granted.
Yes.
Until the small things are taken away from you. And then all of a sudden, the small things start to become big things when they're taken away from you. So one of the obvious challenges for everybody, myself included, listening to Matthew today is don't take the small things for granted tomorrow, because they might not be, you might not have them to take for granted, the next day. So take time to reflect on all of the small things in life. There's also another, I think, really important, perhaps in my opinion, the most important part of your story that all of us can learn from. You didn't really get to the point of asking, why me, God? But you did realize, like, hey, I'm going through some things and I didn't do anything to deserve it. I didn't do anything wrong. And the medical condition is it's incurable and it's intense, which inevitably causes people to say, God, this isn't fair. And there are lots of people listening to this episode right now who have gone through or are going through something right now, and they're saying, God, this isn't fair. And Matthew, I think you can give them some advice on how to approach their relationship with God when things are going on in their life that are just frankly not fair.
That is a great, yeah, that's something great to bring up. Whenever I kind of got to that point of, you know, it's not fair kind of situation is I had to stop asking the why me or it's not fair. And I needed to start asking God, what do you want me to do next? That is the biggest piece of advice that I give a lot of people too, is when you start asking God, what do I do next? He's going to come in like a storm and it's going to be amazing. I try to practice that every day now. Is if I ever have a situation, it's what do you want me to do next? That's just bottom line. That's the simplest way I could probably put that is that.
Is that, and I think you're giving great advice. And honestly, anybody who's really going through something that feels unfair and you didn't do anything to deserve it, I think there is some real solid advice, and stop focusing on yourself and what you're going through. Why me, God? And start asking a different question. What do you want next from me, God? Or maybe what do you want me to learn from this? But is part of the reason you're asking that question, what do you want next, is because it takes the attention off of now and the pain and the difficulties of now and starts to put the attention on what the future might hold?
Yes.
In other words, is that why you're asking the question, or is there a different reason behind asking this question?
The big picture, like I was saying with the blinders, I say what to do next so I could see the big picture. Sometimes, and I know that this is something that's said so many times, people will probably hear this all the time, but sometimes we're so close to that picture, you know, and we're looking at every detail and every challenge that we're facing, and we're so close to it, and we're like, why am I going through this? This is not fair. But when we take a step back and we see that big picture, we then are saying, what do you want me to do next? Because now we see it all, and it's life-changing. It is,
yeah,
so life-changing.
Wow, that just made a big impact on me, Matthew, because I can't think of the number of times I've gone through problems or difficulties in my life with life or with blinders on, just focused on this very narrow thing that I'm really struggling with. I know there are lots of people that are listening or watching this episode right now that are in the exact same boat. And it didn't occur to me to use this language. When you go through those moments and you're super focused on you and what you're struggling with, you really have blinders on to the bigger picture. It's quite, if I can use your language, it's impossible to see the big picture when you have blinders on. And if you're only focused on you and your problem, you have blinders on. So you literally cannot see the bigger picture.
Yes.
But it's really, really hard
to
take the blinders off when it hurts that bad. And in your case, physically, as well as every other way, hurts that bad. It's really hard to take those blinders off.
It is.
I think I heard you use this language. You had to actually get to the point of saying, I can't do this on my own anymore. In other words, I can't take those blinders off myself. I'm not strong enough to do that.
Yes.
I need supernatural help to take the blinders off. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly right.
there is a piece of advice that all of us should hang on to for the rest of our lives, because there are challenges in life that are so powerful, so overwhelming, that I can't do this anymore. And those I can't do this anymore moments are perfect opportunities for a sovereign God, the creator of the universe, to step in and to say, I know you can't, and I can, and I'm just waiting for you to recognize that you can't do it on your own. Now I can step in, and now I can help you take those blinders off and see the big picture and walk with you through this 27 days of unknown and intense struggles.
Yes, yes.
Matthew, I'm glad that you put your story into a book, because people need to hear about what you've been through. Talk about the book and tell people where they can find it.
Yeah, so it's called Faith Over Fear. And I had chose that title because I tell people I had two roads to pick, faith or fear. And fear is the easy path and faith is the hard path. Faith is the, you know, letting go and letting God take over. Fear is just keeping the blinders on and staying in that wheelchair, basically. My book, I know some people aren't going to be watching this, but it's on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. I have had a lot of really cool, awesome successes and accomplishments with my book, both of my books. The other one is a fiction version, but this one is a nonfiction. It's a little bit more of about me and my story. But the nonfiction, I worked at Walmart for a little bit, and I kept saying, I want to get my book into Walmart. Like, that would be huge. and I'm always an entrepreneur kind of in mind, so I was trying every avenue, every way to get to it. And my manager at that time said, you got a work email, right? And I was like, yeah. He said, go email some of those executives at Walmart and, you know, just tell them that you need to get your book into Walmart and, you know, just go give it a shot. I said, okay. And I went back. I went straight to the top.
I love it.
I went to the CEO and the president of Walmart.
Hey, Mr. Walton, yeah. I want to get my book in your stores.
Yeah. And I emailed him. He emailed me the next day. A bookmarker called me a week later. And it was on the Walmart website, so you can get it at Walmart as well.
You can buy it on Walmart. Check that out, man. Good for you.
Yeah. And then the other thing, this is the one I'm kind of the most proud about, my book. It just got me so excited. I mailed my book. I physically mailed my book to the actor Chris Pratt. I sent it to him. I had a response back, but it didn't feel like him. It didn't feel like it was supposed to be like, I was like, this doesn't feel right. It was a picture of him and it was autographed. And I was like, that's not a response you get for sending a book. That just seems really weird. So I posted it on Instagram. I tagged him, sent him a message, and he responded to me that night. And he said, you're right. I didn't get your book. Email or mail it here and I'll try to read it. And then he followed me on Instagram.
Wow. Matthew, you are incredible. You've got Chris Pratt and the CEO of Walmart responding to you personally. Wow, that's really, really impressive, man.
Yeah.
You've got an amazing story, and I'm glad that story is getting spread. And I don't mean just to actors and to CEOs, but it's getting spread to people all over the place.
Yes.
You mentioned it a couple of times before, but where can people go to find you on social media if they want to know more about you?
I'm kind of on all of them, but I'm mostly on like Facebook and Instagram. It's Matthew, 2 T's, .T.Lemke, L-E-M-K-E. You can find me on all of those. I'm trying to get on TikTok. That one's kind of a harder platform for me to do, but I'm trying to get into the whole video aspect of things.
I get it. Sure. Well, we're going to put links to where people can find your book. We're going to put links to your social media accounts and this episode. But man, I just want to tell you, you've got some really, really amazing. You've got a really, really amazing story. Yeah. And you've left me with some challenges. I hope everybody who's listened today is going away with a couple of challenges. So thanks for spending some time on your birthday being a guest on this episode with me.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And we'll see you later, man.
Later.
I can't imagine anyone who has had to choose deliberately to face trials with faith over fear more than Matthew Lemke. And I hope you've heard some things from him today that have challenged you, like don't take the little things for granted. You don't know if you're going to be around tomorrow. And when those hard times come and you finally get to the end of yourself and you throw up your hands and say, God, I can't do this anymore, maybe that's the moment that he steps in and meets you in the middle of your greatest pain and your biggest problems. I hope you heard something today from Matthew that really encouraged you. I want to say thank you for sticking around and for staying connected with us. If you want to get more connected with Matthew, you can follow him on social media. We put his link right there in the notes to this episode. If you want to get his book, Faith Over Fear, you can get that book on Amazon, in Walmart. You can get it in Barnes & Noble and other places. And we put the link to that book in the notes to this episode too. But I also want to ask you, if you want to stay connected with me, if you want to stay connected with the amazing people that are part of this podcast audience, we call them the Unbeatable Army. Well, all you got to do is just simply go over to unbeatablearmy.com. You can also connect with us on social media if you just search for @unbeatablepodcast. And while you're out there on social media, you're going to run into Jason Griffin, who is our fan of the week this week. And Jason, I want to tell you, thank you for being loyal. Thank you for being a listener. I hope you've heard something today, Jason, that will get you fired up and keep you going through the rest of this week. I hope everybody has got a challenge that they're going to take with them this week because of something that Matthew said. Thanks for joining me for this episode. I'll see you back here next week. God bless.
These stories of triumph over adversity will help you handle your toughest days in life and become unbeatable.